Richard Holzapfel tells of him coming up to campus one morning and noticing Nibley off in the bushes picking berries. Quote, I came up on campus and there he was. I had gotten to know him by this time, so I was unafraid. I went up and asked him, what's going on? What are you up to? He was staring up past the temple. He says, oh, look up there. Look at Rock Canyon. Look at that wall right there. You see that? I looked up there. Oh, yeah, I kind of see that. He goes, I've never noticed that before. He was just staring. He had been up there harvesting, then all of a sudden, he was standing up there looking at this thing. And I thought, how many times has he gone up this hill? And yet, it was like a new thing for him. I remember that day, how students were busily coming up on campus with bikes and walking, and he was totally oblivious to everyone coming by. He was just doing his deal. It was really otherworldly. End quote. One of his roles, which Nibley plays for the people of BYU, is that of spiritual guide. He is a prototype of how the spiritual and intellectual can join within one person to embody Latter-day Saint ideals and goals. Hugh Nibley as humble but vigorous defender of the faith. Nibley's single-minded concentration in the field of academic pursuits is one of the principal traits of which make him a model scholar. That passion, coupled with his eccentric persona, has elevated him to legendary status. Nibley may be brilliant, eccentric, outspoken, and different, but he is certainly not other. For underlying all that he does and says is a deep, unwavering commitment to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Never suspect, Nibley is unquestionably a member of the Latter-day Saint community, one of the necessary elements of being a model Latter-day Saint scholar. The other is the fact that his eccentricity enables him to look at things in a new, innovative, and influential way. He thereby propels the community of saints into new areas of scholarship while remaining true to their value center. None of the professors I interviewed expressed even the slightest doubt as to Nibley's faithfulness. On the contrary, most stressed his church devotion as one of his strongest and most admirable attributes. Don Norton says, quote, he's an eccentric man. He is also gifted. I think that is the main reason that you can tell stories about Hugh and can tolerate his eccentricities. In his old age, he is becoming kind of outspoken and so on, but in an unqualified way, he is committed to the gospel. There is no question where he stands or where his commitment is, so he is easy to forgive for all his eccentricities. He has no reservation at all. He doesn't make excuses. He is rock solid. End quote. Many of the other professors, through their stories, conveyed a similar picture of Nibley. He may be acting in an unconventional way, for instance, in forbidding his daughter to attend seminary, but the motivation for his action is believed to be an awareness of and adherence to a higher law. Nibley being attuned to this higher law gives him a certain consistency. Unaffected by the siren call of worldly fame, he is steadfast and unmoving. Gary Hatch pointed out that perhaps there had been a mighty change for Nibley somewhere along the line. Early in his career, he seemed to focus more on worldly scholarship, but there came a point when he turned his attention almost completely to Latter-day Saint scholarship, such as his studies of the Book of Mormon. Hatch reports that some people have accused Nibley of being an apologist, that instead of true intellect with an open mind looking for an answer, he is looking for what he has preconceived, that is, scholasticism or defending the faith in order to leave religion pure or intact. One doesn't have to look far to find books in which Nibley defends the Latter-day Saint religion. For instance, one of the prime objectives of Mythmakers, Sounding Brass, and Since Cumorah is to directly respond to anti-Mormon criticism. The most famous of Nibley's Defender of the Faith articles is No Ma'am, That's Not History, a direct response to Fawn Brody's No Man Knows My History, in which she discredited Joseph Smith. Some professors have pointed out that Nibley is asked to do this defending by the leaders of the church. Apparently, Nibley prefers not to defend his beliefs to others. that in some way he considers it a waste of time, but that Nibley believes it fulfills a duty to illustrate to outsiders what Latter-day Saints believe and why. Countering the argument that Nibley's preconceived expectations are negative is the opinion many professors expressed, that he already knows what he wants to find simply because he has researched every possibility and has studied every side until he has found the whole truth, the Latter-day Saint religion, and everything does fall in line with that. As one professor puts it, quote, Nibley said, "When I found that I could get anything published anywhere, I was no longer interested in publishing. So I think he had just decided to test his capacity as a scholar. I don't think there was any change. I think he just said, well, now that I know I can play the world's game, I'm going to dedicate myself to the building of the kingdom. I don't think there was any evolution of commitment or reorientation of thinking that's too typical of skeptics of the church." Well, Nibley never makes mistakes like that. He just realized there was a lot of shoddy scholarship in the church, among critics of the church, archaeologists in the church, historians in the church, theologians in the church, and he exposed them all simply by doing better scholarship. End quote. Another possible explanation for this shift in emphasis is that Nibley reportedly had a near-death experience at approximately the same time as his academic shift. But none of the professors mentioned this as a motivating possibility. Clearly, these stories are not ultimately about Hugh Nibley. They reveal insights into the people who tell the stories and claim them for their own. One of the characteristics that the professors found most charming about Nibley is his childlike humility amidst the phenomenal accomplishments. Having edited 3 volumes of Nibley's complete works, Don Norton has had firsthand experience in interacting with Nibley and believes that Nibley underestimates his contribution. He tells the story of a publication party with Nibley and his wife after one of the volumes came off the press. Nibley appeared honored that the volumes had ever, quote, seen the light of day, end quote. Nibley said to him on another occasion, quote, "You know, I was reading through some of that old stuff I used to write. There's some pretty good stuff there," end quote. With all of this knowledge and with his huge printed legacy, he remains humble and kind. He's still very childlike in his eagerness to learn and his acknowledgement that anybody and everybody is in a position to teach him. The barbers in the BYU barbershop often have doctrinal questions to ask Nibley when he comes in for his haircut. Quote, "He will explain it to you in a kindly way, but then he will say, but what do I know about it?" End quote. Nibley so underestimates his contribution that he labels his lifelong pursuit of knowledge as merely dabbling. Although he has authored dozens of articles and books, he remains humble about his academic contribution. He goes so far as to say he does not feel he has done anything yet for which he will be remembered. Yet at the same time, many in the BYU community have expressed the opinion that no one can do any truly original Latter-day Saint work because Nibley has already done it and filed it away. Yet Nibley says, "I do hope to do something I can be remembered for." Gary Dayton tells that Nibley believes he is meant to finish the book he is working on now, having received the definite impression that the Lord will preserve his life until the book is finished. He has been working on it a long time, but he says he intends to work on it a lot longer. Quote, "If I don't finish it for a long time, I'm going to live a long time," end quote. What impresses Dayton most in this anecdote is at once Nibley's extreme faith and his keen sense of humor. It is interesting to note that when asked what he would do were he 22 again, Nibley did not say he would study more. In fact, he insists he would spend a lot less time studying Arabic. He didn't say he would try to pursue a more lucrative field than academia, nor did he say he would do everything exactly the same as he had done. Instead, he said he would pray like heck. "If I were young, I'd seek the advice of the Lord in all I do." The O. Hugh Nibley may be the most innovative and capacious scholar in BYU history. He may well be remembered more for his eccentricities, and even more for his manifold peculiarities. Nibley will likely be remembered for his spirituality, to whose heroic proportions all might do well to aspire. Hugh Nibley as BYU icon. Hugh Nibley is a figure which the BYU community has latched onto for over 5 decades as an individual who represents the university's divine and unique purpose. Bruce C. Hafen, former BYU provost and now Latter-day Saint General Authority, captured well in his 1995 university conference address the essence of Nibley that faculty, staff, and students have always found so appealing. Quote, "As I left the statisticians to go to my office that morning, I saw Hugh Nibley walking toward me near the ASB parking lot. Suddenly, he stopped walking, turned around, and began looking intently northward. The inimitable Nibley removed his sunglasses, tipped back his canvas hat, and stood transfixed, as though his eyes drank in a vision. Then I saw what had stopped him, and an aesthetic and spiritual view of BYU replaced the statistical one. A clearing storm and rising sun had left a ring of heavy low clouds around the neck of Mount Tipinogos, like a richly flowered lei. The familiar Timp skyline poked above the clouds, glistening in the sunlight with a light layer of fresh snow, the white peaks contrasting brilliantly with the blue sky and the full green foreground. I stopped too, looking not just at Timp, but at Hugh Nibley looking at Timp. No matter how many hundreds of times he had seen that mountain, no matter how full his head from his latest reading and his always brimming stream of consciousness, Hugh looked up longingly at Timp. He didn't take it for granted. For Nibley, Timp is like a wonderful poem, or a painting, or scripture, or trip to the temple, always revealing new meaning and new inspiration to those who probe its depths." End quote. Hafen chose to tell this story for good reason. As human beings, we need to tell stories in order to make meaning out of our lives. And as groups, we need shared stories. One of the main cycles of stories around which BYU has built its identity are the stories of Hugh Nibley. When Hafen wanted to illustrate that the faculty and staff of BYU must marry the spiritual with the academic, that they should consider themselves on holy ground at their university, what better way to drive this point home than with a story which, writes Neil Postman, gives us direction by providing a kind of theory about how the world works. And what better person to pick as the hero of that story than Hugh Nibley, who gives BYU focus and direction by exemplifying the ideal of academic and spiritual excellence. Because the BYU community has heard so many Nibley stories in the past, and because each member of the community knows who Nibley is and what he is about, Hafen's story was even more powerful. When he described the busy and energetic Nibley standing and staring in awe at the beauty of the mountains, everyone got the point. His story made sense and was convincing because everyone present knew of Nibley's intelligence, profound spirituality, and manifold accomplishments. Yet even he took time to appreciate the sacredly beautiful in life. For the people of BYU, Dr. Hugh Winder Nibley represents an ideal. Because of this, he has become, and will likely long remain, a flourishing BYU legend.